Shoot the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we are now taking our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, and send in a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Good evening, everyone. This is another podcast from Ukrafoot 24. I'm really happy today to talk about a club I've been passionate about for the last 30 years of my life, Sheffield United, the mighty Blades. As we're going into season 2020-21, I'm fortunate to have three fantastic gentlemen with me this evening as we're going to dissect what's gone on over the last month to 2 months and have a look ahead at what we hope is going to come up over the next year. Once again, big thank you to Stell at Shoot the Defence for giving me the opportunity to put the podcast out today. I'm very happy to have Yaroslav Matviev. Yaroslav, great to have you here. Thank you. I know you've rushed back from Cambridge today for this. So how are you today?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm happy to talk about Sheffield United as well. It's my first time when I'm actually predicting the results and everything about the team. I start loving and really excited about what's going to happen.
And I'm really happy to welcome a YouTube legend, Nick. Great to have you with us, Nick. How are you doing this evening?
Yeah, good, thank you. I'm not sure about the legendary status you've just given me there, but I'll take it.
And yeah, really privileged to welcome James Shield from Sheffield Star. James, thank you for giving up your time this evening.
No, my pleasure. Really looking forward to doing this after having a word with you, of course, earlier in the season about spreading the message in Eastern Europe and across the Ukraine. So, and Yaroslav, of course, you know, he helped me out with that as well. So, no, fascinated to do it. Really looking forward to it.
Nearly as much great. As myself. Great to have you here. So, yeah, and what a fantastic year it was last year, guys. It really was. We had some highs. A couple of lows snuck in, I think, towards the end. What was, Nick, what was your opinion as we got to the end of the season?
Well, it was a massive roller coaster, wasn't it, last season? We had some amazing times. Obviously, then lockdown hit us. We thought we were kind of going for European places. Then it hit a little bit of a bump when we came back after lockdown. Some of the players were kind of, I don't know if they'd been worked too hard during lockdown, trying to come back as fit as possible. We've been on such a roll in the past couple of seasons. I think just having that big, huge gap, just kind of everyone just dropped the levels a little bit. So, yeah, we had some, again, it was a roller coaster because after that, everyone upped the levels again. And then we beat, obviously, Chelsea and Spurs. And then another roller coaster dip at the end of the season. But hopefully when we come back into it at the start of the season, everyone will be firing in all cylinders.
Fingers crossed, yeah. Yaroslav, what was your take on it? Where did we end up at the end of the year in your eyes?
Well, obviously it's a great result anyway for the club to promote from the championship and straight away get the ninth. Be in the first half. Anyway, it's a great achievement, some great results. Nobody believed in us in the beginning of the season, and we've shown quite a few good results. We met Chelsea, we played very well against Liverpool, even though we lost. We've shown some passion, and we've shown that we can actually compete with bigger teams. Really a massive obstacle for us was lockdown situation and the fact that after that we kind of didn't recover and we were lacking of fans on the stadiums, like home and away. I think it's a massive part for how we play, and without the fans it was a bit difficult for the guys. Plus, I guess we were not that much prepared in terms of squad depth and how, like, the players whom we had on the bench and the players who were in the starting 11, they were kind of different on the different levels. Mm-hmm. And I felt like at the end of the season, it was something that we were lacking.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that there, because I was going to say to James, you were in the stadium, I imagine, after lockdown, reporting on some of the matches. How was the atmosphere? How did it change? How do you think it affected the players moving into the lockdown period?
Do you know what? When people ask me this, I always feel almost really ungrateful, because we were one of the sort of the privileged few, as it were, who were able to actually get inside grounds when football in England restarted. But I'm not going to lie, it was awful. There was no sense of occasion, and in a dark sort of way, because you had this strange scenario where a lot of the clubs were doing all of the pre-match build-up. They had the music blaring out. You know, the stuff was going on the big screens and the videos were being played. And then the minute the referee blew his whistle and the match got underway, it sounds ridiculous, but it almost felt like an anti-climax at times. Mm. So for me,
I think we've lost James there for a second. But I think he was touching on the fact that the atmosphere really did impact on the games.
I really do. And I know it sounds a little bit of a cliche talking about how close that team is to the fans and the terraces, but I really do think it took about 20% out of their play. I really do. And I think they underestimated what a big challenge that was going to be, playing behind closed doors. And I think, you know, certainly I underestimated it as well. And you just saw how important fans are, especially to teams like Sheffield United, who have, you know, and this is no criticism, have got to put it all in, have got to put absolutely 100% in to every single game to get a result at this level.
Yeah, I think I read a quote somewhere from Billy, who said, you know, one of the game plans, especially away from home, was to get the home crowd onto the team's back within the first 10, 15 minutes, really put the pressure onto them. And then all of a sudden they were playing in the stadium without teams there. So the team had to adapt, and all credit to what Chris and the boys did to then sort of get over that initial hump. And we had the fantastic days against Chelsea and Tottenham, a sort of shout out in my mind. In particular, and all credit to them. Looks like lockdown's going to be with us for a little bit longer. Am I right, gentlemen? Is it the Arsenal game where we're first going to see fans coming in at a short level? Nick, I see you nodding with me. Am I right? I'm a little bit out of the loop.
I believe so. That's what I've heard. So we've obviously got a bit of time with the players. The players are used to it by now, though, aren't they? More than you. So like you said, James, I think it took them a couple of games to get into it. That's probably why we saw the dip in the levels. But yeah, it's just something that we've got to get used to. Obviously, like you said again, the players are used to the fans getting behind them, rather than kind of 5 or 6 years ago when the fans would have been on their back rather than helping them out. So yeah, we've had loads and loads of great results this season. And that comes from the fans giving the players that confidence to go and perform as well as they possibly can. And again, James, like you said, the players have got to be playing at their very, very top level. Because I remember going to the Crystal Palace game, first home game of the season, and I was thinking every single player left everything out on that pitch. And I was thinking, how are we going to do that for kind of 30-odd games this season? But they've done it. They've all kind of push the levels up to the very maximum, and it's excellent to see. Hopefully, again, we can carry on doing that. But obviously, we're bringing in reinforcements now, so yeah, hopefully they can chip in as well. So yeah, it's just great to see. It's a great time to be a Blade.
Really is. And we've had a, shall we say, it's been kind of a quick fire pre-season with the short dash up to Scotland there, with a couple of games up there before some matches back at home, just in the run into Wolves next week. James, I'm going to come to you again because I know you were with the club up there. What was the atmosphere like on the tour up in Scotland?
Yeah, it seemed really good, actually, to be honest. I don't think they needed to do too much sort of physical work because, obviously, you know, it's not been that long a break since Southampton, the final game of last season. So it was really interesting, actually, to sort of see a couple of training sessions taking place. And, you know, very often at this time of year, what you do is you watch players just absolutely flog their guts out and end up sort of being sick somewhere behind a bush at the training ground or whatever as they, you know, sort of try and whip themselves back into absolutely peak shape. It was really, really different this year. It was, the emphasis was really on the tactical side of things and team shape and just sort of, you know, that formation. And I thought that was interesting because at that point up in Scotland, the only two new players, and I know we'll get onto some of the transfer activity that Sheffield United have done sort of later on, but the only two new players that were actually in the camp up in Scotland were two goalkeepers, Aaron Ramsdale and Wes Fodringham. So I thought it was so interesting because you saw, you know, there's been all this talk about the system that Sheffield United play and their sort of, you know, interpretation of that 3-5-2. I thought it was really revealing because you saw the amount of work that goes in to making a system that really should be organised chaos, or should be chaos, turning it into sort of organised chaos, as it were, because it really shouldn't work, but it does. So you've got a lovely little insight into that. And I just wonder as well is if, you know, there's going to be a slight sort of tweak to it. And I just wonder if Chris Wilder and Alan Neil are going to sort of, you know, spring a little surprise.
Yeah, I was actually also thinking by the end of like last season, I was thinking that some teams start to get used to the way how we play, and sometimes I was feeling that we do not really have a plan B in terms of how we play. So even with the preseason, I think somewhere we kind of change the formation we play, and I wasn't that sure that we are playing confident, that we are really doing our best in terms of like understanding other different styles of play. Because obviously, when you play 3-5-2 so much, you're getting used to it also very strongly. And playing other styles is also very important, especially in the next season when more and more teams are already aware of how we play and kind of know what to do against us. So I think it's like it should be something new to the game, to our style this year.
I don't think you're going to see any major changes. I mean, obviously, as sort of Nick and Yaroslav will know, there was just a few subtle tweaks at the beginning of last season when you saw sort of, it was actually more to do with the shape of the midfield, wasn't it? Where you just saw sort of players just, you know, John Lundstrom pushing on a little bit more. So I think it will be something along those lines rather than a major sort of wholesale new system and new sort of new shape being unveiled when Wolves come. I mean, it's difficult though, isn't it? Because I get what you sort of say about having different ways of playing, but when one way works so well, you know, it's very, very difficult to sort of make an argument, isn't it? That you go out into a game and do something entirely different just so we can sort of work on that. We can work on that system. It's tough. It's tough. I think it works well. It'd be a real shame to rip that up, wouldn't it?
I was wondering whether Wilder was going to start the season with that kind of flat three, or obviously Norwood just a little bit deeper, and then as the season progressed, then kind of bring Luke Freeman in and then play an attacking midfielder in like the Duffy role, as everyone likes to say. But we were so good in that, like Lundstrom getting forward, Fleck getting forward, because Fleck never got as forward as he has done last season than ever before, because obviously that's Duffy's kind of job. And Fleck always played a little bit deeper. But I just wondered if we were going to do that. But because we were so good, we didn't need to, did we? So obviously now Freeman's gone out on loan. We haven't really got anyone else that can kind of do that number 10 role. I'm guessing that's not going to be, we're not going to do that anymore. But yeah, we'll have to see what Wilder's got up his sleeve, because obviously Ollie Burke coming in today, I don't know where he's going to play. I don't know if he's going to play up front, whether he's going to play right wing back like he did for Alaves last season. Who knows where he's going to play?
It's going to be an interesting one. Nick, were you happy that by the time we'd gone up to Scotland, the goalkeeper situation had been put to bed?
Definitely, and, yeah. Absolutely. It's been a bit of a headache for the last couple of years, because we've all wanted Dean Henderson back on loan, but then at the same time, you need yourself a goalkeeper, because you can't keep just hoping that Man United are going to loan him to us for the rest of the time. And we all knew that we probably wouldn't be able to afford him. And the money that was on at Man United, we weren't going to be able, even if we could afford kind of the fee, we're not going to be able to afford the wages. So we had to bring somebody else in. I was just wondering whether Wilder was going to kind of bring someone in for a couple of seasons, like kind of a Ben Foster type of goalkeeper, kind of at the end of his career, kind of a stopgap until we kind of could find someone for the long term. But obviously he's put his faith in Ramsdale, which is great to see. Obviously, ex-Blade, young lad, very promising. So, I'm so glad they put that to bed.
I think that's a really, really good piece of business, actually, by the club. I mean, I agree with you, Nick. I think there was an argument to possibly look at bringing someone like Ben Foster in, or even Jack Butland, who I know Stoke were sort of really keen to get rid of. And they were, you know, no disrespect to Jack, but they were circulating his name pretty sort of strongly over the summer. I think the reason why they've gone for Aaron, I mean, clearly he knows the football club. I think he was a player that they didn't want to lose in the first place. It's interesting for me because he's very much in that sort of Dean Henderson mould, isn't he? You know, a young goalkeeper, just had his breakthrough season at the highest level. And I think, you know, you can make a case that in 3 or 4 years' time, you'll possibly see Dean Henderson and Aaron Ramsdale battling it out to become England's number one goalkeeper. For me, it was all about the timing, though, because, you know, if Bournemouth had gone back up at the first attempt and Aaron had stayed, he said to us he had no sort of great desire to leave Bournemouth. He would have been happy to stay in the Championship. But had they gone back up at the first attempt and had Aaron Ramsdale had another really strong season in the Premier League, which I think he did last year, despite the fact that they got relegated, you look at that and you think there's going to be even more interest in him, isn't there? And then suddenly, as we saw with Dean Henderson, the price tag is just something that's beyond Sheffield United's reach. So I think the timing was really key on that. And yeah, it's a club with everything they've done. They deserve their own goalkeeper. I know that sounds stupid, but the club, as great as Dean Henderson is and was, I think that squad deserves more than just a borrowing player. So, you know, and Wes Fodringham as well. I think, you know, he brings real depth to that position. And, you know, I know a lot of people get a little bit sniffy about Scottish football, but I'll let you into a secret. I do quite like it. And anybody who plays for a club like Rangers for 5 years, I don't care what anybody says. You know, they can handle pressure.
Am I right? He was at Brentford before that, correct?
No, it was
Swindon.
That's it. Because he was in the net for that 5-all draw, weren't he, in the playoffs?
we spoke to him actually about that in Scotland, in between when he was boasting about his science GCSE results. I think he fancies himself as a bit of a brain box, Wes, but it was quite amusing. He was saying actually Nathan Thompson, his centre half during that game, he said there was a period towards the end, he said, where we were both looking at each other and we just didn't know what the score was. He says, and our minds were that scrambled, you didn't even actually think to look at the scoreboard. So there was this lovely little sort of scene he was describing, where there's the centre half and the goalkeeper saying, are we through? Are we all right? You know, so he said, we just decided not to try not to concede any more goals.
It's actually an interesting situation with the goalkeepers in the club right now. So we basically have like 4 or 5 goalkeepers in the first in the main squad, And it's kind of interesting to see who's going to be like the backup, who's going to be the third one. For me, for example, I'm like personally, I do not understand what is going to happen with Verips. So is he a fourth choice keeper, or is he like for a perspective, or he's, I don't know, will go out on loan or going to sell him? Simon, is he going to be like the third or the fourth? Or, and also we have young keepers like Eastwood, like Newhurst. We have so many keepers, and I just do not understand how the things are going to operate. And it's really interesting to see how it's going to go.
I think Verrips will probably end up being the number three goalkeeper, because this is going to come out wrong. But hopefully everybody knows what I mean by this, because I actually really like him as a bloke as well. But I hope Simon Moore actually leaves, because he's too good a goalkeeper to be sort of just sat on the bench twiddling his thumbs and playing back up to somebody. And, you know, he could do a really, really good job for somebody in the Championship. He's already written his name into the history books at Bramall Lane by getting the club out of League One. He's a really, really good pro. I think he's served his time, and I hope he leaves and gets a really good football club. And I think Verrips, you know, it sounds daft, Aaron Ramsdale, you know, I mean, he's only, what is it, 20, 22? Mm-hmm. Verrips is still a baby, as you know, as far as goalkeepers go as well. So I think he's one that, yeah, Yaroslav, they'll probably look to keep at Bramall Lane this year. But then possibly, depending on how Jake Eastwood and Marcus Dewhurst get on, who's another academy graduate, maybe look to loan Michael out, you know, to sort of accelerate his development that way.
I'm all right there. The window doesn't close till the middle of October this year, so I would expect some movement on players going out, as sort of tends to be Chris's habit towards the end of the window, when players go out on loan to get the experience they need. I was concerned as well with the number of goalkeepers we seem to have in the club, and with the players coming in over the last week, I'm sat here now waiting for news to break about people moving in the other direction. But yeah, Yaroslav, I'll come back to you, Matt. With after Scotland, and when we came back down for the Derby game and the Preston game, what did you make of the performances? Were you happy?
Well, I don't know. Probably it is just me. Obviously, some good performances, but again, what I was noticing in the end of last season as well is that when it comes to the attacking movement, when it comes to like the final third of the pitch, I feel like we do not have enough, I don't know, probably like the final pass or the final touch, because quite often we control the ball, then it moves like down to the flanks, then something is happening. So I was feeling like we do not really attack. I don't know, I just felt that our attack is not so sharp in a way, it's not so dangerous when it comes to the final third. It's more about like positioning and how we, like, I don't know, put the ball into the box. But yeah, that's probably the only problem I saw, that our attacks are not so dangerous and they pretty much go like in the flanks and from there. But overall, I enjoyed the performance of the guys during the press seasons. I especially like, and probably it's a weird one, I like the half which we had against Dundee, and I like how Berger, how he was like penetrating up the right side. He was like going up and down. I was really impressed by his performance. It seems like he probably the strength of the side against whom we were playing, but probably he catches the role which he was supposed to perform. Probably, I think it can be a really good season for him this year.
Really hope so. I really hope so. It was, I think you're kind of alluding there to that dilemma with Luke Freeman and with him going out to Forest. It's since the Duffy era, which is now over 12 months ago, There's not been anybody in that position, and it's restricted the attacking movement and the attacking play to the wings. Am I right, Nick? How did you feel when Freeman went out on loan this year to Forest?
I was a bit gutted, to be honest, because I would have liked to have seen him more last season. I feel like he did a really good job when Fleck was, I can't remember if it was in, I think he was injured right at the start of the season, and Freeman came in on that left-hand side and really dug in. Like, I was expecting him to be a little bit weak, and he got stuck in, got his tackles in, also obviously linked up on that left-hand side. For someone who's just come in, he seemed to get the philosophy straight away, and I thought he was really unlucky to kind of lose his place back to Fleck. But everyone's going to lose their place to Fleck. The thing is, Ben Osborne has been so good in pre-season, but he's going to lose his place to Fleck. And it's just because John Fleck's been so good over the last few years. But yeah, I would have liked to have seen Freeman stay for what I was saying earlier about having that attacking option just behind the front two. But Wilder didn't use him last season, so there's probably not really a point in keeping him if Wilder's not going to use him. Because I thought there were a few times last season where I think it's the kind of Newcastle home game that really stuck in my mind, where we needed somebody just to kind of create something a bit different rather than going out to the wings, cross-cut into the box. And Yaroslav, as you said earlier, we do seem like we don't have a plan B at times. And it would be nice to kind of see somebody just in behind the front two, picking the ball up, trying to penetrate through the middle. But yeah, obviously Chris Wilder's got his way of playing. 70, 80% of the time it works, but obviously those few times that it doesn't, it looks really, really kind of obvious that we don't have a plan B. So, yeah, it would have been nice to see Freeman, but yeah, obviously Wilder knows his stuff.
I like the fact you mentioned Ben Osborne there. Has he been the breakthrough player of the last 6 months, or is there anyone else that I'm missing when I'm watching from out here in Kiev? James?
No, I really like Ben, and I think you're right. He has been, well, for me, the sort of the big winner of Sheffield United's pre-season, if you like. And I thought he was exceptional against Preston in the last game. I think Ben's big problem, and maybe this is what happened with Luke Freeman as well, I think Ben's big problem is he can play in so many different areas. So, which is good in one sense because, you know, as Nick quite rightly said, John Fleck will come back in. You know, Ben will sort of lose his place probably, barring an injury to Fleck in the game against Wolves. But he can obviously also get a game at wing-back as well. We've seen him there if necessary, although that might have diminished slightly with a couple of the transfer dealings that have been going on. But, you know, I think Ben, he does need to get a position. I think Sander Berge is another one who needs to get a position. It's a big, big season for him. And, you know, I think they need to discover how to use him properly. But, yeah, Freeman, just going back to that was a disappointment for me as well because I like Luke. I think an even bigger disappointment, to be honest, and I'm not going to go into the whys and wherefores and who was right and who was wrong, but I still look at Mark Duffy and think, do you know what? He could have brought something to that team last year. I think there were times when he could have just, you know, used that little bit of ingenuity and that little bit of invention that Mark brings. I wonder if that's why, and I'll probably get onto this later on, they've looked at bringing Oliver Burke in as well, just that little bit of sort of unpredictability. I would have loved to have seen Mark in the, you know, in the Premier League. And I do think he would have added something to the group, but you know, it wasn't to be, was it, unfortunately? But yeah, Ben Osborne, big winner of pre-season for me.
I think we'll all have an eye on Fleetwood this year with Mark teaming back up with Cootsie over there, and hopefully they'll do well in League One and fly the Blades flag down in League One again next year. So yeah, it's been an enjoyable pre-season, and even the game against Preston just last week, it was a good solid performance. And this week, it's all been sort of turned on its head, hasn't it? It's been like people coming through the door every 5 minutes with new signings coming in. Nick, I've been watching a few of your videos on YouTube about the signings.
What was your take on the boys coming in from Derby? Where do you, how do you see their role within the squad?
I feel like, first and foremost, they've got to be back up, haven't they? Because George and Ender were both excellent. I don't think Ender Stevens really exceeded my expectations, because I expected him to be really good this season with how good he was at the back end of the Championship season, because he was... Obviously, he had a bit of a more of a licence to get... Well, he always had a licence to get forward, but the back end of the season, I feel like he really kind of drove forward and had more shots, put more balls into the box. He just got better and better. But George this season has probably been the most improved player. I think just before we kind of got into it, I was thinking, depending on how he kind of starts the season, maybe in January we might be looking to replace him, but no chance. Yeah, like I say, I think out of the two, Bogle looks like he's ready-made for the Premier League, especially attacking-wise. I've heard from some Derby fans that it might be his defensive work that kind of he falls down on a little bit. But I'm really excited to see him, because I think he had something different to George. I think George's final ball and his decision-making at times can be improved. I think Bogle's got that in abundance. So, yeah, I think it's going to kind of be similar to the kind of Freeman, Baldock kind of conundrum that we had at the beginning of the second Championship season, I think it was. Or was it the first? Where we thought Kieran Freeman's really good at kind of the attacking and Baldock's really good at defensive. So I think it's going to be similar like that. But I'm excited to see Bogle. Not heard a hell of a lot about Max Lowe. Had to do a hell of a lot of digging to find anything about him, really. He just looks like a really steady fullback. And I'm quite excited to see him play, just to kind of find out what he's about, because, like I say, he seems really like decent defensive and decent going forward. So I asked a few Derby fans and they did say nothing, no kind of big disadvantages to him, so he sounds quite solid. So yeah, I don't think we're going to see him straight away. I think it's obviously going to be George and Ender, unless one of them gets injured or suspended and they allow one of them to come in and kind of try and grab that shirt off him, or kind of like a drop in form, which I can't see happening. I think Ender and George are battlers and they're not going to let that shirt go easily. So yeah, it's exciting to see see George and Ender being pushed.
James, do you feel that in particular with Max, he was brought in to give Ender that mate for mate sort of replacement backup, so that Chris doesn't have to rely on people like Jack Robinson or Jack O'Connell, even in extreme situations, or Ben Watson, as we've seen, and now we've got a real ready-made win back on that side as backup for the first time in a few years, if I'm...
Yeah, I think it was important. I mean, it'll take him a while to get to understand that system, because, you know, as great as sort of Ender Stevens and George Baldock are at playing that, you know, they haven't worked that out overnight. That's come about through hours of sort of hard slog on the training ground. But yeah, I do. I think it was really important. And I think the other thing you've got to factor into it as well, where Sheffield United haven't always done this. And this, for me, is one of the nice things that, listen, I might be talking rubbish here, but I think I'm beginning to see, and you're beginning to see with the club in the transfer market now, is a little bit more of a strategic approach. Because, you know, I totally agree. I can't see Ender Stevens and George Baldock not starting the season. The chances are I can't see them not finishing the season either. But the fact is, you know, neither of them are getting any younger. Ender's, you know, in his 30s now. George is in his late 20s. And I think we're bringing in two really good, strong, solid players like Bogle and Lowe. It just gives them that ability to be able to sort of work on them on the training grounds, to be able to introduce them to the way that Sheffield United play, and probably get them, you know, hopefully, a very, very, well, very small percentage of what they're hopefully going to be worth in a couple of years. So I think it's a good piece of sort of forward thinking by the football club, as well as taking care of the here and now as well.
I'm going to turn to Yaroslav now, because, you know,
I know, Yaroslav, I imagine you're like me, you watch a lot of European football as well. I watch a lot of Ukrainian football. We don't see players out here putting the sort of yards that Bulldog and Stevens put in for the Blades and have put in for the Blades. Physically, does it make sense to keep pushing them for 90 minutes every game during the season? Or would you rather see some sort of rotation and Bogle and Lowe getting a little bit of game time next year?
Actually, about the players, in CSK Moscow, there's a guy on the right, Mario Fernandez. He's like Brazilian, but now he's Russian. And pretty much he, like, from all the players in Russian Premier League, I feel like he can be good. I mean, obviously he won't come to Sheffield, but he's like a player who is doing kind of similar things to what I see like George or Ender doing. In terms of rotation and stuff, you need to remember that the season is long and the cup games, the league season, so many matches, Boxing Day, everything. And even though the players are great, they also need to rest sometimes in order to continue to like, to push their levels. And again, last season, I wasn't really sure about like backups on the left and right side. And seeing like George and then the week in, week out, and without any like subs, and also without any time to rest, I was kind of nervous about what if something happens and somebody got seriously injured, what's going to happen then? So it's a change of formation or what, or so what's going to happen. And now we have two quality players, which are, I guess they are good if we brought them in wild of a trust. But yeah, I think I see them as backup players pretty much because Andy and George are so good. But to give them some time to rest, it's great to have them.
James, is there any truth in George being scouted by the Greek national team?
Yes. Yeah. I'll tell you what, it was actually quite interesting, this. I can remember doing an interview with George. I think it was about 2 years ago now. And we were just sort of strolling back down towards the car park afterwards. That was where it came out, actually. So I was kicking him for not actually mentioning it during the original interview, you know, because it would have made a really nice piece. We were talking to him about his time in Iceland. But yeah, he does. He qualifies through a grandparent. And I know that he's been asked to provide all of the sort of necessary paperwork, all the documentation to prove that he is eligible. So I think George is expecting or hoping to be in a Greek squad pretty soon.
That'll be a great, great little coup for him as well, and thoroughly earned. And but it will also mean from the Blades' perspective, the need to give him the opportunity to fulfill his career at international level, which I think he thoroughly deserves as well.
Lovely story, isn't it, that? Yeah.
Really is. Moving on to Ampadu. Now that one caught me really on the blind side there. How do we see him fitting in? I know there's a lot of discussion amongst Chelsea fans about whether he's going to get a first team spot or if he is going to provide cover for the team. What do you think, Nick?
Well, I've got a mate who is a Chelsea fan. And when he mentioned it to me, the first time I'd heard about it was the morning of the day when he signed. And he said, oh, he'll walk straight into your team. And I'm thinking, well, we had a better defence than you last season. So how's he going to walk into our team? And then he mentioned that obviously he plays lots of different roles. So again, it's a tough one because obviously he can play one of about four or five positions for us. He can play central centre-back if, say, John Egan is injured, because he could play in kind of a Connor Cody role where he can kind of spray balls left and right. He could also obviously play where Basham plays. I'm sure he could do that. But because he's such a good footballer and so comfortable on the ball, I feel like he could play, like I said, defensive midfield, Basham role, Egan role, maybe even a, a wing back if necessary. I know we've got cover there now. But yeah, again, it's in Chris Wilder's brain. I think that's the only place where he's going to fit in, because I ain't got a clue, if I'm being completely honest. If he's going to be a backup, maybe kind of backup for Norwood, because he's played there loads and loads of times. But in recent years, he has played at centre-back. So I think, again, Basham, Egan and O'Connell will start. If they're all fit, they all will start. So I'm guessing Ampadu will be on the bench, but he's a very exciting player to have on the bench.
Is James, you were saying, obviously, with Ender moving into his 30s, Basham's a little bit further on into his 30s. Is that where you see, in particular, Ampadu offering the sort of the rotational support?
I mean, I've seen a lot of Ethan, actually, over the past couple of years. I've watched him a lot, and I think he just brings so many possibilities. And because of that, it is difficult to see, you know, or predict where his position in the Sheffield United side is going to end up being. I wouldn't be at all surprised if, I agree with Nick, I don't think he'll start the season, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if this lad finished it in the starting 11. He'll be unpredictable, he'll be inconsistent because he's still really young, he's 19. I think everybody's got to remember that, but I tell you what, he picks a lovely, lovely pass. He really does. He doesn't particularly play in those advanced roles when he does step into midfield. But he is a lovely, lovely passer of the ball. And he sees things develop that a lot of other players, even older players, won't. So I just think he's going to bring an awful lot of competition. I mean, obviously, on the face of it, he was brought in to provide sort of cover and competition at centre-half. I think he's good enough to... You know, I think he's good enough to play there or in a sort of a deeper line midfield role. It's a really, really good piece of business, this, by Sheffield United. Really good piece of business.
Could I agree with the sentiment there?
I guess this, like, transfer company is pretty much about getting the support the players needed last season when they need to rest and they need to have backups. So Ampadu, I think it's like a perfect backup. And it's really interesting to see that Sheffield United is bringing players which can play in the different positions all over the pitch. So who knows where he's going to appear, as it was said before, but really excited to see what he can bring to the team.
I think just to make a really quick point as well, just about that, where you could possibly see him slotting in. And I'm in no way criticising the player that I'm going to mention, because how can you criticise him? But what it does is, let's not forget, at the end of last season, Oliver Norwood, who has been great, had a really poor end to the season when Project Restart was first rolled out. And you know, what having someone like Ampadu there, you know, that means as well that there is the opportunity then to make a change if somebody loses form, because players do lose form. You know, they're not superhuman, aren't they? And as great as they have been, you know, Jack O'Connell will lose form at times. John Fleck will lose form at times. Oliver Norwood will lose form at times, as we've seen. So, you know, I think... You know, it's really, really going to put a lot of heat on those lads there in midfield as well. And, you know, we've seen Ethan can play at the back as well. So that competition is absolutely vital as well, just to stop people getting into their comfort zone, isn't it?
But I quickly ask James a question.
Sure.
James, do you see any chance of us signing Ampadu at any point? As in, do you think he's kind of coming to the end of his Chelsea career and the... Or do you think this is just another season that they're trying to get? Because he's not had many games under his belt, as in the loan spells that he's had. So do you think there's any chance of us being able to sign him at any point?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, the shame about it is, and, you know, we're going back, aren't we, into the Henderson situation. You almost need him not to do too well to bring him into the price range, as it were. You know, the better he does, the more difficult it gets to sign. But I don't see any reason why, and I know they've sort of looked at this, and this has been discussed, where the loan, if he does go well, can be renewed again. We saw that with Dean Henderson. And I do think as well then, the longer a player stays at a football club, you know, the more attached they become to that, the more emotionally invested they become in it. And then I think, you know, the easier it does become to sign them. And let's not be right. Let's say he stays for 2 years, Sheffield United are still in the Premier League. They're going to be in a better financial position with 4 years worth of top flight money to be able to possibly go out and offer him a deal. You know, I think so much depends on what happens at Chelsea, whether that's going to be the case. But it's, you know, I think they are certainly looking at it and hoping it will be a longer relationship than just the next sort of 8-9 months.
Definitely, definitely. Now we're going to move on from one teenage wonder kid to one that was once a teenage wonder kid and has perhaps lost his way a little bit over the last couple of years. Young Oliver Burke, who's come as part of a swap deal. But before we get lost in the minefield that probably lies ahead of us, let's quickly touch on the current Callum Robinson side of the deal. Do you any regret there that he's left the club? Or do you think that, you know, maybe the Premier League was a step too far for Callum and we're happy that he's gone elsewhere?
Personally, it's disappointing. I'm disappointed to see Robinson leaving. And not really because I became emotionally attached to him, but I do not see that much of a difference in terms of like Robinson and Burke and the idea of like changing and swapping them. Robinson did pretty well on his loan at West Brom at the end of the season. He was kind of good in the start of the season for Premier League as well. So Sheffield United knows him and know how he played and understands that. And swapping him for Burke, I mean, surely he's going to be, well, it seems that he's going to be a backup. So if it is like that, I do not see the difference between Robinson and Burke. So one or another, they kind of, for me, they look similar in a certain way. So I don't know what to expect, especially from the guy who didn't like play that much and didn't score that much in terms of in the previous year. So I don't know. Let's see what he does. Probably he won't play as a striker. Maybe at another position.
Nick, I know you've been diving a little deeper in after the initial signing was made. Any sense of optimism with it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit of a risk because if you've had a look at any of the West Brom comments about Ollie Burke, you'll know that they're not a big fan of him. I think, he's a massive risk. It does have a bit of a kind of Ravel Morrison tint to it because, it sounds like he's somebody that's, if anyone's going to get it out of him, it's going to be Wilder. So, yeah, I think it's a massive risk. But at the same time, I don't feel like Callum Robinson would have offered too much more than he's already did last season. I hate to say it because he seems like such a nice guy. He's always got a smile on his face. I really wanted him to do well at Bramall Lane. But I think Premier League might be just a bit too far for him. I think he's a top-end championship player, no doubt. But I'm not too sad to see him go. I think I'm more emotionally attached than attached because he's a great player. I don't want him to leave. But I do think that Ollie Burke has more potential than Robinson. It's just, can we get it out of him? And are we going to play him in the right position to get his potential out of him, like I said?
See, James, you're nodding there to Nick's words.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it you can't get away from the fact that it is a sort of a Ravel Morrison type deal, albeit I think Oliver Burke is a much more, how can I put this, much more sensible character than Ravel. He comes with an awful lot less baggage. And some in the game would say, and I'm, do you know what, I'm actually not going to pass comment on this, but I know a lot of people in the game would say that Oliver's attitude and professionalism is a lot better. I think what you've seen going on here, Yaroslav, as well, is it was interesting. I mean, I think what's happened is you've seen Sheffield United. They're not in a position where they can just go out and sign ready-made players. Certainly not at the top end of the pitch. You know, it costs too much money. And I think what's happened is here is Chris Wilder, it was interesting, about a week or so back, he began talking really openly. He'd been talking about it privately up in Scotland, about the fact he wanted an awful lot more power and presence in the attack. Now, that's two qualities that, you know, in fairness to Callum Robinson, he doesn't bring. And I think they've seen an opportunity to earn a little bit of money, because I think West Brom have paid a couple of million as well for Callum Robinson. To sort of bring those qualities in and get rid of a player who, as you said, you know, I think as Nick said, probably wasn't going to be a regular feature in the starting 11. I'm actually really excited about this, because I think if it comes off, I think Oliver could be a real, real crowd favourite at Bramall Lane. It's going to be one of those deals, isn't it, that goes one or two ways. There'll be nothing in between. But in terms of ability, he's got it all. You know, he's the most expensive player ever to come out of Scotland. He's just been really unfortunate with some of the moves he's had. And I don't think his career's probably been managed in the right way. So I think Steve Clark, the Scotland manager, said it all when he said, if this kid can find a home, you know, watch him fly. Hopefully Sheffield United will be that home. We've seen an awful lot of players find a home at Bramall Lane under this regime and really, really benefit from that. And I think the other thing that he can do, if they can get Oliver Burke firing, and he brings a little bit of unpredictability that has been lacking, as Yaroslav and Nick have both said, from that attack. I mean, it was interesting. I was speaking to a lad at West Brom about him actually yesterday, and he said there was a comment once where one of the West Brom coaching staff has said Oliver's first thought is to just try and beat a man and then the next man and then the next man and the one after that. And there was the joke that even Diego Maradona only managed that once. But, you know, I just think, you know, if they can just sort of polish his game a little bit, you know, this kid really has just got bags and bags of ability. So, you know, fingers crossed this one comes off. It is a gamble, but I think it's one worth taking, because he brings in qualities that they've not got in that front line.
Definitely. I think with the players that have moved on at the end of their contracts at the end of last year, there's probably space in the squad to take, shall we say, a risk. I have no idea what sort of wages he's on, but I can't imagine it's taking huge chunks out of the club. Talking about sort of, you know, big season, big opportunities, we mentioned Sanderberg earlier in this podcast, and it being a big year for him. When he came in January, we saw it as a sort of a step in a new direction for the club with the, you know, the move into European football and bringing in the big money signing. Do you think if he doesn't have a big year, what sort of impact is that going to have for the club in the long term with the sort of the desire there to bring in players from overseas? Will it really shut the door? Or if he has a successful year, will we start to see more and more players coming in from mainland Europe next year? I hope I haven't caught you unaware with that question, but I'll go to James first of all with it.
Yeah, it's a big season for Sander, isn't it? And, you know, I think actually he's been possibly one of the big losers of the way that pre-season's worked out, because, I mean, clearly the kid's got abilities, clearly got an awful lot of, you know, really strong technique. I think the one thing that he struggled with was the physical side of the Premier League. And, you know, he admitted that himself. So he was possibly the player out of all of them who needed a really, really good and proper pre-season programme. And he's probably not got that. He's actually now going to have to learn on the pitch rather than on the, or bulk up on the pitch rather than on the training ground, as it were. But, you know, yeah, I think he can get firing. You know, he's got to improve. I think even he knows that. I think we've seen signs that that's beginning to happen. In terms of the makeup of the squad, I think they will. Well, they are looking to broaden their horizons a little bit. But having spoken to the manager and a couple of people around him, I think they really are looking to keep the core of that squad you know, to keep that as being British and Irish players, because that's the market they know best. And I think the one thing that's never spoken about when people talk about going into Europe, you know, Sheffield United, they don't have the money at the moment to go out and buy the top names that everybody knows about. So they're looking at sort of trying to find the next big thing in Europe. Well, scouting systems that are capable of doing that, they cost money as well. You know, they cost a huge amount of money to construct and maintain. So, you know, I think they have got good contacts abroad, but, and I think they'll be looking to exploit those a little bit more. But I certainly think the basis of the squad under this manager will remain sort of, you know, British and Irish.
You agree with that there, Nick?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we've been so successful in the past few years. And I think the thing is that, as I think James said at the start of the pod, that it's such great team cohesion that you don't want to break that up. You don't want to do an Aston Villa and start bringing in lots and lots and lots of different players and upsetting the dressing room, because us fans kind of just look at just watch a game and think, why is he not playing well? Why is he not playing well? You don't see all the things in behind the scenes. And obviously, we've probably had a lot of problems in the past with other managers and other players, and players being too big for the boots and stuff. It doesn't seem like anyone, we've got any of those in, well, maybe one or two that we've tried in the past but haven't come off. But yeah, Wilder likes to take a risk every now and then. But as long as that core, we've got the core British players that kind of we've had from kind of Championship and League One days, is there, I can't see there being too many bad apples that couldn't upset that apple cart, if that's even a thing to say. But you know what I mean. You get what I'm trying to say.
I do. I'm just going to touch on something you said. You mentioned Aston Villa there. Does it feel like this summer that our scouting department's been doing scouting for Aston Villa as well as Sheffield United? Yaroslav.
Really, it seems like something comical. You see the reports about Sheffield United being interested in someone, and then after like 2-3 days, like Aston Villa is, they are also interested in this guy. I mean, obviously, it's not true. It's not happening like that. I guess what's happening is that Aston Villa is also not a club which can I mean, probably they are not able to buy like really, really big names, and they're kind of in the same way they're looking for the players which are good in the Championship or leagues around. And they, well, if somebody is great in the Championship, obviously the teams in the Premier League will be interested. And it, I mean, it's not that surprising to see different teams looking for the similar players. I mean, obviously it's fun to see, but it's not like a spy action scene, I guess.
I know. I only say in jest, and you answered that question very delicately as well. We've been going for a long time tonight, gents. Well done. Keep the strength up, and we'll bring it home now. One big name the club's been linked with a lot this summer, obviously, is Brewster from Liverpool. Do we see him coming in? I'm going to quickly go around the room. Nick, to you first.
Well, Wilder's said today that we're expecting one more, and I'm hoping that he's going to bring him through, because it's going to be tough. I know quite a few teams are interested in taking him on loan, but how well we kind of did with Henderson for Man United, I wonder if Klopp's... I know we didn't have the best relationship with him for what happened with Ben Woodburn, but hopefully Klopp's seen that and he thinks that we can bring him on, and Chris Wilder's a good enough mentor to do that. Also heard the 20 million being bandied about, that somebody could buy him and then they put a clause in the contract to buy him back. That's also something that obviously could be done, but I don't know how much money we've got left in the pot. So I'd love to see him. I can't think of any other strikers that we could go for right now. I think couple of mentioned Troy Deeney, but I don't know if that's what Wilder's kind of interested in going. Because obviously Troy Deeney would offer something different, because I think he's got a lot of kind of, obviously a lot of things going for him, but not a lot of other strikers have been, names have been going round. So it looks like it's just Brewster. Obviously Wilder throws in a curveball every now and again, and we see somebody random that we didn't expect to see, like Ampadu, really, because nobody saw that coming kind of a week before. So, yeah, it's either going to be Brewster or someone really, really wild. And I think whoever Wilder brings in, it's going to be someone exciting.
Yaroslav, you hoping for Brewster?
I mean, it's all about how Wilder uses players, and if he believes in Brewster and believes that he can do good for us, I have no reasons not to believe it. Obviously, it's interesting to see how he's going to adapt if he's playing in the Premier League. But again, anyway, as a squad depth player, maybe as a starter, he can bring the variety, he can bring the support. And our strikers are not getting younger. So new young players, they can develop, they can provide some pace if we need that. So hopefully he's going to come.
Over to you, James.
Yeah, I think he'd bring something that they need, and that's pace and a little bit of power and that sort of young, youthful exuberance. The only thing I will say is, and I've banged on about this all summer, and I've probably bored everybody senseless with it, so apologies, I'm going to bore you all senseless with it again. I think it's a real shame that this is a position that Sheffield United even need to fill, because they've got a player in that squad, Lees Moussai, who should be a £50-60 million footballer, who's got that pace, who's got that power, who's got that finishing ability. The only problem is, he's just not fit. And you can dress it up how you want. You can argue about why that is, why that isn't. The kid is not fit. We've seen that in pre-season. We saw it last season. It's clearly an issue because he turned up not fit. He finished the season not fit. But we saw what he can do when he scored those 5 goals in 10 games over the autumn period. Mm-hmm. I just hope he can get himself sorted out, because, you know, I just think he's got it all. I think, no disrespect to Rhian Brewster, you know, I'd love to see him at Bramall Lane. I just think it's a real, real shame that that's a vacancy that even exists within Sheffield United's squad, because I don't think it should release Moussai there. A fit and properly prepared Lees Moussai. And I actually mean that as a pat on the back to the kid.
That's actually interesting, because after the autumn period, Moussai wasn't showing wasn't performing that well. But after that impressive period, for me he was always like a starter. And every time I saw that he is on the bench, I was surprised, like, why he's not playing. He's really good. He has pace. He's, like, sharp in front with the ball. And, I mean, I feel the same about Moose. He's a really cool player. And that's why I'm also talking about Burke and, I don't know, Brewster as a sub, because I want Moose to start scoring again. I really love this guy.
Yeah. One final question from me before we wrap up for tonight, gents. Obviously, it's kind of mystic ball time. What would be a successful season for you this time around? Year two in the Premier League. What realistically are we looking for? I'll come to you, Nick, first of all.
I think I feel like anything between 8th and 12th is a decent season. To avoid relegation is always going to be the main aim, and I'm sure Chris and the lads will say that themselves. Like, as long as we don't get relegated, keep building on this. I can't see us finishing kind of like any higher than what we did last season. I think last season was exceptional, but I would be happy with a 12th place finish, even a 13th or 14th place finish, as long as we're not looking like we're going to be in a relegation scrap. I'll be happy. And I think we're just going to keep building on it and building on it and building on it.
Do you agree with that, Yaroslav?
Yeah, pretty much. I guess this season is going to be a little bit more difficult. There's obviously teams around know how to play, and some like top end teams can adapt to that, I guess. Probably a little bit more difficult, but still, I believe that we can like calmly finish the season between like 10th and 12th position. We have like quality, and we just need to show it. And I believe in this team, and I believe in the managers that they can do it and they can show it.
I agree completely with you both there. 10th place is what I've got firmly sort of implanted in my brain as where I want us to be. James, I'll finish up with you. I don't know if you can, in your position, give us a prediction, but if you can, it'd be great.
Yeah, God. Do you know what? I'm not actually going to predict where they're going to finish, because who would have predicted last season? So you just, you know, for me, I just think the target is to stay up, because I don't like talking about football in terms of just money and finance. But I think, you know, the longer you can bank up that Premier League money, the more you can develop a football club, the more possibilities that then begin to open up in the transfer market. So I think for the next 2-3 years, I think the aim is just to stay up. And as Nick and Yaroslav have said, you know, to do that by hopefully not becoming involved in a relegation battle whatsoever. So I just think the first target, 40 points, that's the most important one.
Definitely. Well, gents, it's been a real pleasure tonight talking with you all. It's been great insight, and looking forward to the season ahead. Can't wait for Monday night. We're going quickly, Yaroslav, if people listening to the podcast want to get in touch with you, what's the best way online to reach out to you?
Well, my Facebook page, Yaroslav Matveev. Just message me there about anything you want. I'll happily talk to you.
And Nick?
I'm a YouTuber, Sheffield United YouTuber. I go by the name Ingrid Nick on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere.
And to you, James.
Yeah, obviously I'll have to give my employers a plug when I saw the Stars website. Yeah, but yeah, Twitter, James Shield 1, Facebook, I'm on that, and James Shield Football on Instagram as well. So get in touch via that.
And I'm Adam at Oprahfoot24. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, and every other social media outlet out there. It's been another fantastic podcast for Shooting the Fence. Thank you, everyone. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And good night from us all. Yeah.